welcome to the Impact Show. In the studio tonight, we have the usual crew. You've got Grant, that's me. We have Ro. Welcome, Ro.
Hey, how's it?
And Suzanne. Welcome,
hi,
Suzanne.
All.
But we've also got some very special guests tonight. We're going to be talking about a very sensitive subject. So sensitive, in fact, that we can't even tell you our guest's name. So tonight we're going to call her Miriam. Say hello, if you can, Miriam.
Hello there.
And we've also got Britt in the studio.
Hello.
So we're going to go to a song, and then we're going to come back. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. We're on 3RPP on the Impact Show, and we're going to be talking to our special guest,
which is tonight Miriam. So, Miriam, welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Now, look, we're really happy that you could be here with us tonight, and obviously, Miriam isn't your real name; it's a pseudonym name. So, why is that the case? Why do we have to give you a false name for tonight?
Well, I'm doing mission work in the Middle East, and so obviously proselytizing the gospel is not allowed and is an illegal practice in a lot of Islamic countries. So
for the sake of the safety of perhaps the mission group that you work with and yourself and perhaps other people that you've spoken to, we sort of keep you in incognito tonight?
True, and if any stories come out, you know, just to protect the people that I work with as well as those that I come in contact with on a daily basis.
Okay. Now, we can tell by your accent that you're an American. So which part of the States are you from? Or is that really a Canadian accent?
No. You're just asking that to be polite, aren't you?
I know.
I'm actually from the South, so good old Tennessee.
Where is that?
Home of the Volunteers.
Oh, someone in the studio has just asked where Tennessee is.
Well, it's in the South, and it's really close to Florida.
There you go, Happy Row, our quiet man sitting over there in the corner. Good-o. Now, what led you to wanting to be a missionary?
Well, do you want to specify that question as far as missions in the Middle East, or would you
Being interested in missions generally, we can go on later talking more about the Middle East.
Okay. Well, I guess I would talk a little bit about my testimony whenever I speak to that. But just the fact that, you know, as far as living a gospel-centered life, I believe that God has saved us for a global purpose, and that be to advance His name to all tribes and tongues and nations, believing that they will be around His throne one day. And so how is that going to happen, you know, if I'm not willing to risk my life maybe or serve Him in that capacity? And so I guess that would be a shorter answer to that question.
Okay, well, that's a good answer. So have you done any other missionary work, you know, in other areas, other countries?
I did an internship in China at one point for a while, and just worked with an orphanage there, as well as did some college ministry with a university that we lived right across the street from. And then as far as just, you know, in my own hometown, I had a good friend, and we would go out on the streets and just evangelize downtown, you know, like a local area where, you know, there were a lot of clubs and bars or smoke shops or something like that. So
you sort of got the bug for mission work, whether that be in your own state or in another state or another country.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I just figured, why would I go all the way across the country, you know, if I'm not doing ministry in my own hometown on a consistent, regular basis. Mm-hmm. So,
and I believe you've been to China too. Was that mission work as well?
It was. Mm-hmm. Most of it was just with university students. And I was granted an internship over there for a summer and worked alongside another girl and, you know, just prayed pretty hard for those people over there and gained a love and an experience, you know, working in in a setting where, you know, it's also still, you know, illegal to, you know, speak about the gospel and the claims of Christ. So,
would you say that Christians in China are persecuted to any type of degree, or to what degree do you think they are, if so?
From personal experience over there, you know, the people that I personally came in contact with, it may have been more along the realms of, you know, within their family. They may have been kind of shunned, or, you know, it was a shameful thing that this person had gone off, you know, and committed to the faith. And, you know, so they might receive some sort of rejection in a sense from their family, but, you know, I don't think I was as fully immersed as I am in the setting that I'm in now.
And so did you, while you were in China, head to any what they would call underground churches or anything like that? Or was your main work just sort of working with people on a one-to-one level?
Yeah, I had been involved in some of the underground churches or house churches that were meeting. Granted, you know, I didn't quite understand everything that was being spoken at the time, due to the fact that I wasn't in any sort of language learning program. However, most of the people that I met within those churches were pretty evangelical, as far as, you know, committed to sharing the gospel.
Okay, well, I think pretty soon we're going to have a break. Is that right? And so we'll come back with some more questions. I'll give you, let you have a breather. Thanks, Grant.
Okay. Welcome back to the Impact Show, 3RPP. On 98.7 and 98.3, we're talking now to Miriam.
Well, hi. Now, for anyone who's just tuned in, we're speaking to Miriam, who, which isn't her real name tonight. She's working in a country, in an Islamic country at the moment. And so we're sort of just finding out from Miriam, you know, what happens there, what's it like to evangelize, what's it... You know, what do people think in that country? So I'm just going to go on with some more questions here. So in what we were just talking about before, Miriam, is there a lot of persecution of Christians where you are, or, you know, or, you know, perhaps for Western Christians there, obviously maybe not, but for those... people that were, you know, obviously believed in Islam and that has become a Christian, what do they face?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely persecution, whether that be at a political level, whether that be at a familial level, especially if someone's come in from a Muslim background, you know, because it's basically treason to convert into Christianity, or the belief of Jesus. And so that can be punished by death, you know. And if it's not punished by death, then there are other consequences, whether that be, you know, just rejection from the family, or whether that be, you know, they may be kicked out of their home, put on the streets, or lose their jobs. Any of these things are potential results of, you know, converting to Christianity,
so it's not easy
to a belief.
Not easy to be a Christian.
No, definitely not. I guess, I mean, just from personal experience with some friends here recently, I have a good friend, and I would venture to say that she's a little bit more westernized in the way that their family lives, but they're definitely very Muslim. And so this girl, you know, whenever she was younger, she had a dream, and the dream was of Jesus, and he said, you know, follow me, I'm the way. And so from there, she received a Bible, and she began to read, and, you know, the Lord put her, put in her life many contacts of those who were knowledgeable about the gospel and led her in the truth, and ultimately she is committed, you know, to following Jesus. And so here recently... came out, you know, to her mother that she was a believer. And so on a very small scale, you know, in that setting, you know, she has been, you know, talked down to by her mom. Basically, it's held over her head that, you know, her father might be told someday, and what would result of that, you know, I'm not quite sure. It may be that, you know, he might marry her off to some sheikh, you know, and to try and convert her back to Islam, or, you know, it's even just in small things day to day, whether or not she, you know, she was forced, you know, to fast alongside of her family, or her Bible's been taken away from her on multiple occasions. She's been denied the ability to hang out with certain people that maybe her mom is suspicious of, you know, that they might be believers and might be discipling her. And so it can range from that all the way to, you know, other people where, it, you know, they would definitely die for their faith, which, you know, there are plenty of those stories as well, where people have been, you know, killed in families so that the honor of the family, you know, might be restored. And so...
it's pretty heavy.
Yeah.
You know, I was just sort of thinking about here how upset we get if, you know, we're called a name when we're out witnessing, or, you know, but we don't suffer any of those difficulties that they do in those nations. So how do people come to Christ in an Islamic country?
Honestly, the majority of the stories that I've heard, and even statistically, it's been said that people receive dreams and visions, and it may be, you know, Jesus has appeared to them in a dream, and he has told them that, you know, from as specific as go to this house, you know,
wow,
and find this man in this community, and he will give you a Bible. And so from there, these people get access to a Bible, and then from there they begin to read, they begin to study, and it maybe, and it sets them on a journey, you know, of about 8 years or so, until maybe at that point, you know, they find someone who shares the full gospel with them, who disciples them, whether that be another person who's from Muslim background, or whether that be, you know, someone who is a foreign missionary, and then they come to Christ after that and commit their lives. But you know, I've definitely witnessed a lot of people who have come to know him through dreams and visions. And so, you know, I just remember I would get on Joshua Project, you know,
that's
back
amazing.
Home and pray for these people, you know, and they would always ask, you know, number six or whatever, pray for dreams and visions for these people. And I was kind of just like, well, why, you know? And that is how God is choosing to draw a lot of Muslims into his kingdom. And
that's amazing.
It
so
amazing.
The difference between evangelizing in a Western society as opposed to an Islamic society, what would you say the main differences are?
Oh, there are quite a few differences. Whether that be in the way that you approach it initially, the things that you begin to talk about, and the things that initially, you know, might need to be addressed, whether that be the Trinity, you know, and what that looks like. That's a very offensive, a very hot topic, and it's they may use a lot of words that we would use in our own Christian vocabulary that means something completely different. But if I'm sitting here talking to you about it, I may think that it means the same thing, you know, in my belief system, and we share that, when in reality, you know, the Trinity is, you know, Jesus, Mary, and God, you know. Or the fact that, you know, God, you know, had intercourse with Mary, and that's what created Jesus, you know, and so this is the Trinity. And so things like that just needing to be reconciled, as well as you have, you know, family and you know, men, and the interaction between a woman and a man, you know, in that setting. Is it appropriate? Is it not appropriate? And then, you know, if you have one person that's interested, it's not as much of a free society, you know, where I can go out and meet with a lady and have coffee and, you know, begin to study with her, or, you know, mention to her some ideas or claims of Christ. You know, it would be in the home, at a meal with other women around, you know. And so it's evangelize, because we want these people to come to Christ in a family setting, because we don't want to extract them from their community, you know. because that would make anyone go crazy, mm-hmm. you know, in that type of society. And they're a very communal society, you know. And so we want people to come to Christ, you know, in families, so that they have a support system, mm-hmm. so that they can begin to worship God as a family.
As a family together.
Yeah.
So what about foreigners that are there trying to reach people? Do you think it's easier for a foreigner to go and be accepted to what they say, or do you really see a need for local people to witness to their own people?
Yeah, I definitely say that there is a great need for the locals to rise up and evangelize their own people, because, you know, there's so many cultural barriers that, you know, they would just do such a better job, even with language, mm. even with an understanding of the culture, the things that are appropriate, the things that they already know, mm. you know, between one another, the mentality, the system of how they operate in that society, and stuff makes a huge difference. And so, you know, we pray for more laborers, you know, to go out, because the harvest is ripe, you know,
yeah.
and the workers are few.
Do you find that as a foreigner, they accept your quirks? They accept you being, for example, a little bit more forthright than would someone who comes from that culture?
I guess I would speak from personal experience on this one, just in the sense that we had a lady, a national that we were working with when we were in a certain area, a camp, and... You know, I think they would be a little bit more, give more of a listening ear to a foreigner, whether that be out of respect, whether that be that they want to honor us, or whatnot. But, you know, this lady came in and, you know, she would boldly proclaim, you know, some claims of Christ. And, you know, it was very offensive to them. And so they asked us to leave, you know, and they said, you know, if you want to come back, you will find another person to, you know, help translate your materials, and we don't want her back in here, you know. So and there are other wow. circumstances behind that. And so you know, as far as, it's a big deal for an Arab Christian, you know, to have a desire to evangelize their own people, because some of them, you know, sit with the mentality of, you know, well, they've persecuted us for so long, they are just, you know, they're condemned, and we're not going to do anything about it, you know. So there's just a lot of tension between those two groups in that area, which makes it, you know, hard feelings on both sides for sure.
Yeah, I can't imagine to, you know, just to even think of all the difficulties that you would have. But I sort of want, I guess a lot of the witnessing there then would have to be almost covert. In a sense, you can't be open
yeah.
like we are here.
Well, what I do, to be honest with you, is ultimately we want to get behind closed doors, because sharing in a public area would be, you know, you may compromise other people as well as yourself and those that you work for who are also in that city. And so, you know, the goal is we want to get into a home. We want to get behind closed doors. We want to know what keeps them up at night. We want to know what, you know, they think about for their kids and the future and what they're scared of. And so when you get in those settings, they automatically ask you, you know, well, what are you doing here? And that's just a springboard, you know, to, instead of just saying, you know, given this, like, I work for an NGO and this is what I do, you know, why not take that opportunity and go with it? And that's what I do. You know, you just go straight into your testimony, and you reveal the power of God in your life, and you tell them, you know, that's what brought me here. And so if they respond favorably to that, then you continue by saying, you know, who's at the center of the story? It's Jesus. Would you like to learn more about him? Just up front and, you know, very just out there with, you know, just taking any opportunity that we can to exalt the name of Jesus, because the Jesus that they know is not the Jesus of the Bible. And so, you know, when you exalt him, you know, that's I feel like they see that. They see that it's real. And when you have a story and you tell them that, and then you ask them, well, well, so what's your story? Mm. And a blank stare, you know, comes across their face, you know. They don't have a story.
Do they think that initially, would they say that you worship the same God as them? I hear oftentimes a lot of Muslims say that, oh, we worship the same God.
Yeah.
Do they
would definitely
say that?
Say that? Sure.
Yeah.
And they want, a lot of the people just want to, you know, they want to be peaceful with you. They want, you know, to say, oh, you know, we're just so much alike in so many areas. The only difference is that we don't believe that Jesus died.
Yeah.
And obviously that is the core of our belief system. And so when you take the time to really address that, you know, and especially exalt it instead of revert back from it, you know, I think that they see your confidence and in the boldness that Christ has given you and the power in his name, you know. So
now look, I know we're going to have to go to another break, but when we come back, I really want to talk to you about the women where you are and some of the things that they face. So we'll talk more about that after the break.
Welcome back to the Impact Show. We're having a really interesting chat tonight with Miriam. And it's just so interesting to hear what a lot of Westerners don't know about that happen in other countries. So we're going to continue on.
Mm. Well, just a bit on the women in the country where you're at. Now, I know for a Western woman, you know, we would naturally think that a lot of you know, Islamic women are quite suppressed. Is that what they think? You know, I know that's how we feel, but is that what they feel?
Well, I have personal stories on a couple.
Yeah, tell
of
them.
These. But, you know, you get a different answer from each woman. You know, like the other day I was talking to a lady who wears, you know, the full veil and everything, and I asked her, I was like, you know, why do women wear, you know, these veils? Why do you like it? You know, do you feel like you have to wear this? And so, you know, she answered to me, she was like, well, I feel safe when I wear it. And so, you know, now living there and being a part of the society and seeing how things operate and that it is a very, you know, male dominated society, I guess I kind of understand where she's coming from, you know? Mm. Whereas before, you know, outside looking in, I would have looked at that and been like, oh, you know, she doesn't really know what she's talking about. Surely she feels like, you know, she's forced to wear this and, you know, whatnot. But honestly, you know, it's every day, you know, you as far as like a Western woman living in that type of society, you know, they already have preconceived notions of who you are. And that, you know, by movies and film and magazines and all types of media. And so, you know, they automatically kind of assume the worst about you. And so, you know, some days I'll be honest and say, like, I wouldn't mind walking out with a, you know, a niqab on my face because, you know, I don't want to be stared at. I don't
want to.
So,
do you think there? Look, I know it's pretty bad in the West as far as, you know, a man's respect for a woman, particularly these days we're so open sexually and everything. So, do you think that a Muslim man perhaps wouldn't have that same respect for a woman as what we do? Perhaps he just thinks he can do what he wants with that woman or any woman?
Well, you know, what's interesting is I think, you know, we put a lot of that on the men there, but I don't know if it's because, I don't know why, but I was in a home a while back and I was talking to the mom and the daughter. And one thing that she said to me was just, you know, and it just really took me off guard. She was like, well, you know, men are not expected to control themselves. And so, you know, it's up to the woman to, you know, really protect herself, whether that be through clothing or, you know, if she's out past the, you know, out past nightfall, you know, the last call to prayer, or, you know, walking the streets at a time that she shouldn't, or she wasn't covered appropriately, or whatever that, whatever, those things come, you know, into play. And I guess there's just, because there's such, you know, religious law forced over the people, you have, you know, a repressed society. And in that, you know, when you're not taught any responsibility, whenever you're not allotted any, when you're not, when you just can't really even think for yourself and you just do, well then, you know, what I've seen of that is just you have this underground, like, pulse of sexuality that, you know, just comes out in any form that it can. And, you know, it's really angered me, to be honest with you, sometimes. And it's really made me sad just that they, in a sense, don't have grace to pursue obedience to God, like, through, you know, a desire to obey Him, you know.
So even within a Muslim family where you've got brothers and sisters, and we know they tend to have a lot of them, would the brothers respect the sister? Or, you know, is there that? Or do they sort of have no regard for that? Or
you see it in, you know, as far as from the camps and stuff, which are very poor, you know, and it's very different worlds, you know, going from the camp to the city. Because you do have, you know, different mindsets in there. But, you know, even if the boy in the family is, you know, 6 years old or whatnot, he's the one that you're going to end up answering to in a society like that. You know, and so, yeah, it is a very male-dominated society.
I thank the Lord I was born in Australia. I'd probably be dead by now. Wow. So now for you... Well, actually, before we get on to you, what do they think of the Western world?
I think it's different whenever you get into a home, because a lot of questions I get asked are, you know, do people really like you there? You know, do you feel safe? Is there any, like, acts of hatred towards you by any means? And so... you know, when I'm in a home, I definitely don't feel any of that. It may be more, you know, I may see, like, an American flag X'd out on a sign, or, you know, people speaking out against certain things, or they definitely want to talk to you about that when you're in, you know, the home. But they really are hospitable people, you know. They really are servants. They just want to honor you. They just want to serve you. And you know, once you're in a home with just, you know, a regular person, a regular Arab family, it's really amazing, you know, mm-hmm. that just to hear their life stories and get to know who they are and what makes them tick. And, you know, in that realm, you know, there's no outward forms of, you know,
so
hatred.
What's life like for you as a Western woman, you know, living in an Islamic world? What's your life like?
You know, I really struggled with the decision to go to the Middle East as a single person, and especially a single woman, because it is such a male-dominated society. And, you know, I just saw that, you know, family ministering to families just looked a whole lot more, just looked like the way to do it. But then I looked at Jesus and I saw this single male of, you know, 30 years old or so, you know, standing up, looking over Jerusalem and weeping, you know. And I was like, well, you know, he wasn't married, you know, he didn't have a wife. At times, obviously, his family rejected him and he was in a society and was, you know, just... it may have looked strange.
Do you
know?
Feel safe as you walk the streets through the day?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I wouldn't walk the streets at night, you know, just because it's a really judgmental society sometimes, you know. People talk and they know every detail of your life. And so, you know, that definitely, just to respect or just to present, you know, myself. And you know, not damage my testimony. You know, I wouldn't do certain things, you know, that are acceptable in Western societies. So,
right. I've just got a message in by text, actually, a little question that someone wanted to ask you. And what it is they're wondering if there's any open churches there, or is everything sort of just underground? You know, how does that work?
Well, I guess it kind of depends on what country you're in the Middle East. And I guess there are open churches. There are Orthodox churches in some, you know, countries in the Middle East. And so, and there are evangelical churches there. However, for a Muslim, you know, who is a believer, or to come from a Muslim background to faith in Christ, and to be in a church is a very dangerous thing, you know, because you have the Mahabharat, you have the people watching. And so, you know, that you would not see, you know, a person who comes from a Muslim background in a church. And so in that light, I guess you would see them worshiping, you know, in home groups, and it would definitely be in secrecy. So,
so does that mean then that the places where there are churches, that's more Westerners?
In the churches?
Yeah.
No, you would find, you know, Arab Christians, people from, you know, Christian backgrounds, not necessarily believing evangelical, you know, Christians who desire to share the gospel. But you would see people from, you know, Christian backgrounds, you know, in those churches. So,
okay,
or Orthodox or, you know, anything like that.
All right. Sorry. I'm just so waylaid here with everything. So how do they judge you as far as understanding foreigners, you being one?
Yeah. You know, I guess kind of what I was saying earlier, that maybe my just the fact that I'm a Westerner, you know, they may look at me as someone who is, you know, a loose person morally. You know, you hop in a taxi and it's not anything to just kind of, you know, hey, you want to get married? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, of course you want to get married. You came here because you wanted, you know, a husband. And so, or, you know, yeah, so you would definitely get calls on the street, or you know, his dad, or just things like that, because they ultimately think that, you know, you're just a loose person as far as like in your morals. And
if you're not married, you're loose.
Yeah. And also, I guess, to be a woman and you know, to have my family so far away is a very strange concept to them. And so I must be over there for, you know, other reasons.
Like prostituting or something like that?
Sure. You know, why not? I mean, sometimes if you're, you know, a foreigner and you don't have dark hair or can blend in as well, they might ask you if you're Russian. And then if they ask you that, they basically are kind of asking you if, you know, you're a prostitute. So,
wow.
So, yeah.
So, I know we're going to have another break soon, but before we do, I just want to slip a question in, because when we come back, I sort of want to find out more, you know, like how you got saved and some things like that. So, now, with the women in the region that you're in, like, what's a day like for them? You know, what, you know, can they go out and do various things like we do here? We go shopping, or, you know, do they go out at night?
Yeah.
What's the story with them?
Well, I guess a regular day would consist of, you know, being busy with their kids, you know, just like any other mom.
So having kids is important?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And lots of them.
Why is that?
You know, probably for multiple reasons, but it's very normal for them to have large families. And, you know, it may be the idea, I mean, because you could have multiple wives, and so you might have, you know, 5 kids from this wife, and then you might have, you know, 8 kids from the other wife. And, you know, I would venture to say that, you know, they believe that they want to, you know, keep they want to populate the world with, you know, Muslims, because if you are, you know, if you're born a Muslim, you know, so that's one way to kind of up your status.
And when there's a couple of wives, how do they handle that with each other? Are they friendly? Do they get angry at each other?
You know, gosh, everyone is so different, you know. If a woman is married, you know, like some of the ladies that I know now that have been recently married and I'm friends with, they are just so appalled at the idea that, you know, their husband might have another wife. They, you know, but then you have, you know, other women who may not be able to have children. And so, you know, or that, who knows, they may just really not like their husband.
And they're so, quite happy for him to go off
with like,
someone else.
Oh, yeah, go ahead, you know, just get married to this lady and I'll just, you know, you've bought me this house and I'll stay here with all these kids and you can go live with this lady over here. And as long as you're supporting me, you know, and I've got, you know, some sort of income and I can, you know, just rule the roost, then I'm okay with that.
Oh.
So, yeah.
All right, well, we're going to take a break now and we'll be back with some more questions with Miriam.
Thank you.
Now, we're just going to cut that song short because we've just realized we're running out of time and I want to talk more to Miriam because I think that's more fun than listening to music. So now, Miriam, just another question here that I've got. Would you encourage people to become missionaries, you know, particularly singles? Because I know there's, you know, a lot of single people that they sort of get quite frustrated because they, you know, particularly women, they sort of think, oh, well, I can't do anything for God until I maybe, you know, get married and go out and pastor somewhere. What would, you know, your advice be for other singles out there?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Not in the sense that, you know, it's been like that there hasn't been points in my journey in the Middle East that have been, you know, saddening or really discouraging or hard because of my singleness. However, you know, I believe we're called to share the gospel. You know, we are called to go and preach. You know, making believers.
So
and,
you're
and
saying that
them.
You're saying that once we're Christians, that's, you know, now our life is in our own. That
right.
We're all called to preach the gospel,
And we've been equipped. You know, we've been equipped with the gospel message. We've been equipped with a testimony. You know, we have a changed life, And then not only that, but we have been promised, you know, the Holy Spirit, and He lives within us, and so He's equipped us with everything that we need, and we have Him with us, you know, which is awesome. Mm. And so, you know, Him teaching us along the way and all of that. And so, I honestly, you know, I've been reading a book by David Platt called Radical. And, you know, in that, he just talked about, you know, it's not really a question of whether we're called, you know.
It's we a question are called. Of doing.
Yeah, we are called. And it's, you know, and God is, you know, not unjust in the fact that people, you know, in these foreign countries are not, you know, having access to the gospel. You know, it's Christians, you know, believers who have a story, who have a changed life that are unjust, you know, and not going and risking their lives, you know, in radical obedience to the gospel message, you know, to share the gospel with those that are lost. And so, you know, that spoke a big word to me, you know. While I was over there, or, you know, I still am in a sense.
Yeah. So I guess if you can't afford to go overseas or it doesn't quite happen, then your mission field is at your front door, basically.
Yeah. And you know what? I honestly feel like, you know, does He call us to a place, you know, or does He call us to a people? And those people, you know, exist here. Mm. There are plenty of refugees all around, and there are plenty of people that are from, you know, all different types of walks of life and, you know, different countries, and so they exist here, and, you know, we should, you know, speak with them. You know, it's just enough to say hello and you know, see them as a real person, a person in need of the gospel, a person who is perishing, you know, and will perish and forever without the gospel.
So for you, just to end up now, we've only got a couple of minutes left, so you know, how did you come to know Christ? And what can others do out there to come to know Christ?
All right. Well, I definitely didn't really grow up in a Christian background. My parents weren't believers. And so, you know, I was young and I actually had a dream. And it was about Jesus and he was coming back to the earth and, you know, to judge people according to, you know, sin. And so I it was the first time, you know, after I had that dream that I felt shame, you know, it was the first time that I felt convicted for my sin. And so, you know, I asked my mom, and my mom had no answers because she didn't know God. And so little did I know that we had a lady who was living across the street, and she was coming over and asking us if we wanted to study the Bible. And so I just couldn't get this out of my head, you know. And then so from there, she came over, she explained to me who Jesus was, why we needed, you know, a Savior, why we needed him as our Lord.
Why is that? Just in, I guess, less than 30 seconds.
We need him because otherwise we are dead in our trespasses. Mm. You know, we are wretched at best. And so we are in need of a Savior because without him, you know, we will perish eternally in our sin because we are offensive to a holy God, you know, and we are in need of restoration. And thank goodness that he has a plan, you know, to reconcile us back to him.
Well, I want to thank you tonight. It's been really, really good, and we've all learned heaps. And I hope that we're all encouraged to just witness more. And don't be afraid when we walk up to that Muslim person, witness to them. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good on you. Thank you. It's been great having you tonight. So this has been the Impact Show, 3RPP. If you want to hear this again, if there's something that you're curious about, we're going to put a recording of the show up, seeing that it wasn't live streamed tonight. Unfortunately, that's down. But if you want to know more about Jesus, more about the gospel, then there's a couple of websites you can go to, needgod.com, whatsthegospel.com, or our church's website, cgc.org.au. So this has been the Impact Show. Been great to have you. We'll be back next week.
Where music, where people, where everything you want us to be. Where local, a community, it's radio for you and for me. We're growing, we're showing, the peninsula's a place to be. 98.7 on your radio dial, where 3RPP.